A two-story-high, mechanically operated polar bear stopped by the UN climate conference today in Paris. The giant bear comes courtesy of Greenpeace, which is trying to call attention to rising sea levels and the polar bear's shrinking habitat as so much glacial ice melts away. Waleed Abdelati studies what's happening with polar ice. He's director of the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Studies, or CERES, at the University of Colorado Boulder, and a former chief scientist for NASA. And Waleed Abdelati, with all the talk of temperatures rising 1 or 2 degrees over time, it does seem that what's happening with the ice is more effective in getting people to care about climate change.
Well, and ice is an interesting thing because it's binary. People get it. You see, oh, it was there and now it's not. And you can see change. Temperature, you know, what does 1 degree C mean? It's 1 degree centigrade warmer. So what does that mean? But ice, there's a very visual story that's unfolding there, whereas with temperature, it kind of creeps up on us, and it's hard to associate with directly.
And what is the latest that we're seeing at this point in terms of melting of the ice sheets?
Well, ice worldwide in general is melting. There are some places that are actually growing a little bit, but for the most part, it's melting in Greenland and Antarctica, the sea ice, the glaciers of the world. And in the Arctic in particular, this melting has been pretty fast and pretty dramatic, both on land and in sea.
What does it look like at this point? Can you tell that that's happening just up close and personal?
You can tell up close and personal, or you can tell, as I and a lot of my colleagues do, from space. We look at satellite imagery as well as photographs on the ground, and we are watching the ice retreat right before our eyes. And from space, we actually have ways of watching how fast it flows, and we're watching it speed up. As the ice sheet in Greenland gets warmer and wetter, it gets faster. And so not only is it melting and water is running off the surface to the sea, but it's speeding up. It's flowing faster. So it's delivering ice and calving icebergs into the sea much more rapidly.
And you can tell that it is not cyclical, that this is something new that's happening to the ice.
We can tell in two ways. One, you know, ice kind of leaves scars where it's been and where it, you know, where it hasn't. And so as the ice is retreating in Greenland, we're seeing areas that haven't been exposed for a very, very long time, hundreds or perhaps thousands of years. But also, as we understand the mechanics, as we learn how these ice sheets work, the processes at work are processes that really are kicking into high gear simply as a result of the warming air and waters that surround Greenland.
What about the idea, and you mentioned it, of some places actually gaining ice? What's going on there?
Well, you know, the ice in the Earth system and temperature, it's you can think about the stock market. You know, the stock market itself may be doing one thing, but not every stock is going to behave in a manner consistent with the average. In the case of ice, there are parts of Antarctica in the middle of the continent that are actually growing. A warmer climate brings more snowfall. And so the center part and actually part of the eastern part of the Antarctic ice sheet is growing. It's thickening. But the perimeter, the areas that are lower in elevation, that are closer to the warm water, is shrinking and shrinking pretty substantially.
Is there anything that we can't tell right now from the ice that you wish we were able to figure out, that there's a sort of a mystery that's still there about what's happening with the climate?
I guess the biggest mystery with respect to the ice is what's it going to do? There is the equivalent of about 24 feet of sea level rise locked up in Greenland and about 200 feet of sea level rise locked up in Antarctica. And that's not to say that's all going to melt and, you know, all that's going to change this century. But how much will it change? How fast will it change? There are pretty complicated interactions between the ocean, atmosphere, and ice that we're getting pretty good at unraveling. But we still can't predict what the likely sea level rise for the future will be. There are wild cards in the system that we're still working to understand.
What is it that you can tell when you're actually there in Antarctica that you can't tell from the satellites?
Being there, what you can tell is just how massive these phenomena are. These are incredibly huge icebergs that we see calving off into the sea. You know, one of the larger ones in Antarctica was about the size of Manhattan. And when you see this vastness and you see this really, really pristine environment that as you're physically present there, you feel is so far removed from the things we do in the lower latitudes, the lives we live. And when you see it affected, you see it changing in this way, you realize it's far more connected than perhaps a lot of us may think.
And yet every time there is some severe weather phenomenon in the United States or in Europe or in Asia, whether it be the worst snowstorms ever or the hottest year on record or this or that, everyone looks at that and says, well, we can't definitely tie that to climate change, but it's likely that that's involved. How come we can't directly tie what's happening in the weather here to what's going on with the ice in Antarctica or in the Arctic and to what's happening with rising temperatures around the world?
So you characterize that pretty nicely. We can't tie the one event to the larger change because these things have largely happened before. There are extremes built into the system. Climate varies, weather varies. So you can only really say that we've created conditions that are more conducive to this. And as we start to see this more and more often, then we can start to say, well, we're seeing this more and more because of the changing climate. Now, I liken this to if you stand at half court on a basketball court and shoot 100 baskets, one or two might go in. And if you take three steps closer and shoot another 100, two or three might go in. And you keep doing that until you're under the basket where you can make 90 out of your 100. You know that you've increased the likelihood of making the basket as you've walked closer. But you can't say, I made the basket because I got closer, because you made a basket from half court. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but it's funny that you say that because even when you make that analogy, there are a lot of people who say, well, these scientists, they can't connect this directly to that. Why should we be making these big adjustments to our lifestyle to deal with climate change when we can't say that this is directly tied to what's going on?
Because in science, we deal with probabilities and likelihood. And if I carry the basketball analogy further, if you wanted to make a lot of baskets, you would choose to stand closer to the net. If you want a climate that has less of a likelihood of extremes, if you want a climate that is not as likely to be excessively disturbed in ways that stress people and lives, you want to try and create a climate that is stable, that is consistent with the climate that humans have evolved under. And right now, we are pushing ourselves further and further away from that. We're basically, you know, loading the dice to behave in a certain way that is counter to our interests.
Are you optimistic that that's going to change in Paris?
I don't know if it's going to change in Paris. What gives me optimism is the tone of the discussion in Paris is different than what we've heard on the international stage in the past. So I do think this could be a meaningful symbolic step toward a better environment, a better outcome. But it ultimately is going to require nations, states, municipalities, and individuals to decide that this matters enough to change our culture, to do something about and take steps that really are targeted at improving our climate condition.
Maybe they should have had the climate talks in Antarctica.
I think they should. The two things would come of that. One, there'd be a real appreciation for the absolute beauty. And the other, they would see some pretty impressive change.
That's Waleed Abdelati, director of the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences at the University of Colorado Boulder and a former NASA chief scientist. Waleed Abdelati, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.